I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A month ago, we read that the 2016 National Opportunity Summit was going to take place. The Nation We Make Opportunity Summit 2016, hosted by Opportunity Nation, which is a very interesting group. It's a bipartisan cross-sector group of business leaders, nonprofits, elected officials, and young people. And the purpose is to restore the American dream. This was the fourth summit held by this organization, and this one held at a time when economic opportunity is the number one domestic issue facing the nation. Opportunity Nation is nonpartisan. They don't support or endorse any political candidate or political party. They do have six broad goals that they think the next president, all the policymakers, and community-based organizations could take to expand access to opportunity for our nation's young people who are not doing very well economically, not finding it easy to enter the job market. So we're going to be talking about all of this this hour of the program. The people who were at the conference, many of them believe the American dream is at risk. At the core of America is a belief that through hard work, ambition, and perseverance, everyone has a fair shot to get ahead. But our American dream is at risk. Too often the zip code where we are born or live dictates our destiny, and it's particularly true for our nation's youth, where over 5 million young adults are not in school or working, millions more at risk for disconnection, and it's very hard then to make it to the top or near the top of the income ladder. We have two guests with us this hour. Both have very, very interesting resumes. Monique Reiser is the executive director of Opportunity Nation. She is a first-generation college graduate. She speaks frequently about the obstacles that she faced growing up as an ambassador to the Aspen Institute's Ascend program, which helps children and families achieve educational success. She served as deputy director of military spouse programs for the Military Officers Association of America, has directed communications for Child Care Aware of America. She attended community college in Washington, and she then got, as part of the first class of Gates Millennium Scholars, a full scholarship allowing her to get her bachelor's from Gonzaga University and a master's in information management from Syracuse University. And she will be with us momentarily. Also joining us is Alan Casey. Alan is the founder and the CEO of Be the Change, which creates bipartisan national issue-based campaigns to affect public policy and culture. He has done a number of campaigns with Opportunity Nation. He's the co-founder, many of you will be familiar with this, and former CEO of City Year, education-focused national service program uniting young adults 17 to 24 from all backgrounds for an intensive year of full-time community service, mentoring, tutoring, and educating children. It served as a model for AmeriCorps. He's a graduate of Harvard College and law school, teaches a course on social entrepreneurship at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. And we'll start with you, Alan. Hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. It's great to be with you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, our great pleasure. We saw that you were having this summit and said, oh, we have to talk about this, and we had to wait till it was over. So I'm really happy this day is here where we can talk about this. You, let's talk about service for a moment, because
sure.
I know that was part of the conference, and it certainly is a big part of your background. You are the co-founder and former CEO of City Year. Tell me about service, young people in service, how important that may be in sort of guiding a person's life.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for focusing on this issue and for having us today. As you mentioned, I co-founded City Year and led that for 20 years as CEO, and then started Be the Change as a follow-on nonprofit. And we do national mobilization campaigns, bipartisan, on three big issues, national service being one of them, with my roots in City Year, Opportunity in Fighting Poverty, the Opportunity Nation, and Got Your Six, which in the military means Got Your Back, and that is focused on empowering post-9/11 veterans and bridging the civilian-military divide. On terms of service, and it's a big part of, as you mentioned, we laid out six big goals at this national summit we convened, one of them being to achieve at least 1 million Americans in civilian national service within a decade. And we just crossed a big milestone with AmeriCorps, and City Year was honored to be one of the inspirations for AmeriCorps. Just last week, we swore in the millionth person into the AmeriCorps program. And it's such a great effort. And what the idea is basically that as part of growing up in America, every young person should be challenged and given the opportunity to spend at least a year in full-time civilian service. It's transformational. We've seen it. There's so many needs we have in our country. Why don't we enlist this next generation that really can be the next greatest generation, attacking issues of education in our low-income communities, fighting poverty, reclaiming our environment, doing disaster relief work. We've seen AmeriCorps members, you know, after all these big disasters, as on the ground responding, preserving our environment. There's so much that needs to be done. And this generation is actually the most serving generation since World War II. They are volunteering at huge rates. The AmeriCorps program and the Peace Corps are flooded with applications. Mm. So the idea is to say, we should have this as a new rite of passage. This should be something that unites us. The great thing about service is people can serve together with people from very different backgrounds. They develop skills that help them with employment. They become, our studies show, that they become more active citizens. They vote at higher rates. They continue to volunteer at much higher rates than their peers. They develop friendships with people from different backgrounds at higher rates. They build that social capital, and they become leaders. So we feel like it's an issue, an idea that its time has come. It's a big part of our opportunity agenda. Many of the programs focus on advancing education or fighting poverty. We're so thrilled that former General Stanley McChrystal, or General Stanley McChrystal, now retired, is leading this effort nationally with the new Service Year Alliance. And it's had great bipartisan support from Senators McCain, Hatch, Mikulski, Coons, et cetera. It's basically an idea that we believe we have to say now is the time, especially with this bitter partisan environment that we have. Why don't we invest in something that unites us and brings us together and says to our nation's young people, you're needed and you're important and we will support you.
Well, tell me about the difference, the money support for AmeriCorps and for the Peace Corps in 2016 compared to where we were with VISTA and the Peace Corps, I don't know, let's say 1972.
Yeah, well, it's really a small fraction of the budget. So the Corporation for National and Community Service, which includes AmeriCorps and also Senior Corps and Foster Grandparents and the National Civilian Community Corps and now VISTA, which has been incorporated into that, is about $1 billion. The Peace Corps is about $350 million. At its peak, the Peace Corps was 15,000 people back in 1969. And as I said, they're being flooded with applications. The idealism of this generation is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. AmeriCorps, the first thing that Be the Change did was a national service campaign, and we helped to lead the effort to get the Serve America Act passed in the first 100 days of the Obama administration, which was totally bipartisan. Led by Senators McCain and Hatch and Kennedy and Dodd and Clinton, and it authorizes AmeriCorps to grow to 250,000 people a year, which would be a quantum leap. Unfortunately, with the partisan politics we have in Washington, that law hasn't been funded yet, and AmeriCorps roughly stayed at about the same level it was when George W. Bush left office at 75,000 people, and he actually grew it by 50% after 9/11. So it's not a huge expenditure. The key is to build the political will and pressure from young people, from citizens, from people across the country to say, we should have this. It's good for the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, and we also did a study with Columbia University that showed for every dollar invested in service programs like AmeriCorps, there's a $4 return to society in terms of the benefits developed. So it pays for itself. And also young people who do AmeriCorps get a college scholarship. And as you know, the issue of college debt and the burden of that, it's now the biggest debt in the country. And the increasing cost of college is tremendous. Secretary Clinton actually just proposed fulfilling the Serve America Act, which is great, and also doubling the post-service college scholarship award so that if you do 2 years of AmeriCorps, you can get to a position where you can virtually graduate debt-free. So it's an idea that's a win-win, and we've made it a centerpiece of our agenda with Opportunity Nation, and we hope that once the election is over, we can point to this and other ideas we've proposed as things that we can rally the country around.
Mm-hmm. Monique is with us. Monique is Opportunity Nation's Executive Director. Monique, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, great to have you here. 5.5 million young adults between 16 and 24 disconnected from school and work. Unemployment is double the national average. I know that the summit that you had focused on that. I know you speak frequently, Monique, about your own life. You are the first college graduate in your family and how that has benefited you and what we do with this large number of people whose lives probably aren't going very far, considering the fact that they're not working and that they're not in school when they have to have at least some further education beyond high school in order to enter the field of work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was a first-generation college student, and my journey, my transformational journey, as we say, coming out of a lower-income family to where I am today, drives a lot of my interest in this work because I know what's possible when young adults have the right resources. My mother was 19 years old when she had me and was not able to continue her post-secondary education. So when I became a young mother at 20, it was sort of a mother wanted to make sure that my son had a different outcome than I did. And among many other resources, one was, as Alan was just talking about, the importance and the cost of college. I really wanted to continue my post-secondary. So I had him, and 6 weeks later, I went back to school, and with the help of the Gates Foundation, I was able to complete my education through the Gates Millennium Scholarship Program and actually earn a master's degree, which really set me on the path to lead where I am today. So when we talk about young people, 16 to 24, who don't have that pathway, I am acutely aware of what can happen if you don't have that pathway, and what can happen if you do. So our approach to this issue of opportunity and really closing the opportunity gap in America is specifically on this population. It's actually, when you think about it, it's almost the entire state of Wisconsin being out of school and out of work when you think about mm-hmm. the number of young people we're talking about. And the interesting thing about that is also that it's still really well above pre-recession levels. So when we're thinking about the economic recovery, good news about wages and poverty rates, we still have a population in our country that is struggling. And when we look at children, they're also disproportionately in poverty as well. So Opportunity Nation is working really from cradle to career on bipartisan policies and evidence-based policies that we know can ensure children get the right start in life, they get the right education, and then as they become youth and young adults, have clear pathways into further training, education, and employment. It's a really critical time for young people, obviously, to have a job because it'll affect them the rest of their lives if they get that great first start. You know, we are in a difficult political environment, but we're excited about where there is consensus, where there is support, and we feel like this is really our moment to decide as a country if we want to invest in making sure that opportunity really is equally distributed across our citizens.
Alan, why are there 5.5 million young adults not in school or working?
I think because we as a society haven't committed to ensuring that every single young person has the chance to achieve the American dream and to reach their full potential. I know you've covered this story with people like J.D. Vance and Senator Mitchell. Unfortunately, you know, this is what America's all about. I'm a product of the American dream myself. My father was an immigrant from Iran. My mother's family was Italian. My great-grandfather was a coal miner. My grandfather was a shoemaker. And my parents made huge sacrifices to get me a great education and provide me with the American dream. But for too many of our young people, we aren't doing that. And we, you know, Martin Luther King said, we have the resources, we have to find the will. And Opportunity Nation is very much about reawakening in all of us the need to find that will. It's not rocket science, Kathleen. We know what needs to be done. You know, more than 50 years ago, we committed to putting a man on the moon. And we did it, even though we didn't even know how we were going to do it. We actually know what needs to be done now, and yet we aren't doing it. And, you know, this is costing, first of all, it's a tragedy. It's a moral and civic tragedy when you have 5.5 million young people who are not in school or working. Mm-hmm. It's also a cost to us as a society. It estimates, you know, there's over $90 billion in lost revenue and also services that are provided, et cetera. So I think it's primarily because we haven't made the connection and saying what needs to be done. And we have to embrace the fact that every single child should have a chance to reach their potential and achieve the American dream.
The summit says that by 2020, Monique, two-thirds of American jobs will require at least an associate degree. What kind of system do we need to be putting in place to make sure that happens so people can afford that and so that they will stay in school long enough to achieve that? What do we do?
Absolutely. I mean, it starts even earlier, right? When you think about, you know, why we have 5.5 million disconnected youth, part of it is also, one, you know, we're working very hard on increasing the high school graduation rate. That is absolutely essential for today's economy. And then that they have post-secondary opportunities. So the nature of work has changed, I think, as some of our fellow citizens have felt over the past several years. So I think one thing we do is continue to get that high school graduation rate up to 90%.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we've made some progress on to do better. Are certain pockets of our population that we're still missing the mark. We're still low when we're talking about African-American and Latino youth. They are far disproportionately affected by this issue. So when we think about opportunity and we think about where your zip code is, this is where we see this come into play. You can drill down into certain parts of our country and see the disparities. When we're talking about pathways to employment and training, we need to invest more in closing, bringing in, you know, our sectors between our education and workforce sector. Community colleges are doing incredible work at the local level, working with local employers to ensure there is a pathway from high school through post-secondary into careers that are going to pay competitive wages, and skilling up young people for the jobs of tomorrow. College is expensive. So, you know, we encourage people to pursue post-secondary education, but we don't want people to overlook the fact that you can get a bachelor's degree, but there are other industries where you can also get credentials and do well. So part of it is also just changing the way we think about post-secondary education and informing young people what their options are, where the jobs are of today and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. What are the jobs of tomorrow, Alan?
Well, I think, you know, the economy is changing dramatically with globalization and with technology, and I think there's a whole set of areas where we can train people. So healthcare is a growth industry.
Mm-hmm.
Education is a growth industry. High-skilled manufacturing, actually, we are building things in America again. That's another growth industry. Getting back to where people have skills. I mean, you know, we are going to need electricians, carpenters, people who build things. We need to invest in our infrastructure as a society. I mean, we have our roads, our bridges, et cetera, that are falling apart. So there are plenty of, but we also have to, you know, support the reskilling. And one of our agenda items here is reforming career and technical education. We have to take advantage of our extraordinary community college system and train people for the jobs of the future and then make the employer connections so that people actually are being trained for jobs that exist. There are right now millions of jobs that are open, and yet we haven't trained the people to fulfill them. So there are things that can be done if we sort of put aside the partisan politics and say, we know we can do this. Let's appropriate the right focus and also bring in all three sectors. Starbucks has led an effort called 100,000 Opportunities, where they committed and they've now galvanized dozens of companies to join them to provide 100,000 jobs for opportunity youth. They've already exceeded that goal after just 1 year, and now are expanding it. So there's also a strong role for employers in this effort to say, we're going to give opportunity the chance, we're going to give them the training they need and provide them with that career path. We just did a report, and Monique can talk about this, about the retail sector, which is another area which, you know, is not going to be shipped overseas. We have a strong retail economy, and it's often a great entry level for people for growth. And Monique, you may want to say a word about what we just learned from our retail report.
Sure. Monique?
Yeah, we were very excited to release our retail report, which provided some new information about the retail industry. We often use our opportunity index to do analysis on different areas, like we did one on civic engagement, and found a very strong relationship between the rate of civic engagement and disconnected youth, meaning they're more connected. So we used a similar frame when looking at the retail industry, and we found a positive relationship between a state's opportunity score and retail employment rates. So as there were higher retail employment rates, a state's opportunity score increased. We also found positive correlations between retail employment rates and specific indicators on our index. We have 16. So we found positive relationships with lower crime rates, lower poverty, lower income inequality, and higher on-time high school graduation rates. We also found some interesting data just about this industry. We looked at 6,000 resumes with EMSI and looking at CareerBuilder.com resumes. We found that 40% of those that we analyzed were actually going to school or listed school as their first opportunity after working, and that 25% were actually under the age of 25. And then, you know, of course, we found sort of what the skills they developed in the industry, but the point being to sort of look at, you know, through this tool of the index, you know, what's the real impact of the retail industry on places and what can young people learn, especially in those first jobs, because they're so critical to have. And there's certainly more to learn, but it was a really interesting finding to see what some of the positive impacts were of the retail industry across the country.
We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. We're talking about this major conference that took place. Actually, Opportunity Nation has been around for some time. This was their fourth major summit, which took place in September. And they looked at goals for changing the situation for many young people in this country where they're having a hard time getting ahead. The U.S. must do more to retool educational supports, economic systems, and federal policies so that young people can meet the challenges of the 21st century global economy. We have cited this, but we'll cite it again because it's astounding. 5.5 million young adults not in school or working. Millions more are disconnected. And what do we do about that? There are a lot of things that we've discussed already. We've been talking about a year of service because one of our guests is the founder and CEO of Be the Change and was CEO of City Year, an AmeriCorps national service program, which is highly, highly successful. And what do you think about this? Are there millions of jobs? This is another thing. We've been saying this for some years now, that there are jobs out there and we're not training young people for the skills that are needed for some of the jobs that are there. How do we change the system to make sure that there's communication between those who have jobs to offer and those who would like to fill those jobs? What do our schools need to know? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page, where we like to hear from you always, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Our guests are Monique Reiser. She was appointed Opportunity Nation's Executive Director last year. She was before that Be the Change Chief of Staff. Ellen Casey is also with us, the founder and CEO of Be the Change, previously was CEO of City Year, an AmeriCorps national service program engaging 17 to 24-year-olds. Lots of calls coming in. We'll be with you in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. Mary in Milwaukee. Hello, Mary.
Hello. Well, you're talking about teachers, you know, people being taught, but in Wisconsin, they passed the Act 10 here many years ago. Many other Republican states have done this, which has vilified our teachers. We've lost many of our seasoned teachers to early retirement and to other locations, and now we have a teacher shortage. So if we have a teacher shortage, how do we teach all these people that need to be taught in the future?
All right. Thanks, Mary, for your call. Alan, you want to start?
Sure. Mary, thank you for raising that. I think that we need to revere our teachers. There are other countries where teaching is the most honored profession. And I think you can't talk to anyone who's succeeded in life without them telling you a story of at least one, two, or three teachers that really made a fundamental difference in their life. I could tell you, you know, about many in my own life. So I think we need to, you know, it should be, first of all, recognize that if you go into teaching, you know, just as we honor doctors, my dad was a doctor, and you know, they should be honored too, or other professions. We need to make it on that same plane so that people are revered when they go into teaching. Secondly, we need to compensate our teachers well so that people can actually achieve the American dream as teachers. Third, we need to make sure that people are getting the opportunities to become teachers. I've seen with City Year, for example, with our core members, they work as teachers' aides, and now a third of them are graduating and going and becoming teachers. So we need more national service programs that can introduce young people to the idea of what teaching can be about, because we do have a teacher shortage and there are going to be millions of teachers retiring over the next 10 years. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of things we can do. I think part of it begins with how we look at the teaching profession and the place it stands in our society, and then also supporting people who do go into teaching so they can make it a career. And we also have to have opportunities for teachers to advance and grow and advance in their own careers. So, I mean, I've got two kids in public school, a third grader and a ninth grader, and I can tell you that they're you know, after my wife and I as their parents, their teachers are often the most important people in their lives. So I think, Mary, you've raised a really good point.
Mm-hmm. Monique, I'd like for you to weigh in on this too, please.
I think Ellen is right, definitely, when we think about sort of the cultural perception of teachers. I think we certainly respect them, but you know, they have a tough job. I also have two children. I have a seventh grader now, and I have one that just graduated high school. And first, I don't think teachers can do it alone. I think we ask a lot of our teachers, but really, when we look at our coalition and sort of what we know works, is to have, you know, multiple supports. So we have coalition members that work in the schools like City Year or organizations like Turnaround for Children who can provide some of the more specific needs of that community. I think that, you know, no community is the same and no child is the same. So I think we need to obviously embrace and elevate their status in our country, but also ensure they have the right supports, because it is a challenging and complicated job. And I know spending a day with my sixth grader or seventh grader is not easy. So
right, it's
I think
a hard
we need to
job.
Offer more supports for them. It's a very difficult job, and every child is different. So they need the support to tailor their education for these young people.
Thanks, Mary. Jeremy and Racine. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think one of the major contributing factors for young adults going into a skilled trade, manufacturing type of job, is just too much uncertainty in the manufacturing sector. Every time we get a new trade dealer with other countries around the world, it opens up economic for the businesses. It's good for business, but it's not so good for the workers. So it's really hard to convince, for instance, my son's 20 years old. It's really hard to tell him, hey, go into a skilled trade, when he knows that he could get his 2-year associates in tool and die making, go to a good company, and 3 years later they're shutting down the shop and moving south of the border for cheaper labor and mm-hmm. operating costs. So it's really difficult to lure young kids outside of, after high school, to go into these skilled trade education jobs. So,
Alan.
Jeremy, again, I think it's an excellent point. I think there's, and we are doing more skilled manufacturing in this country, which is a really good thing. And so we do need people like your son, hopefully, to make those choices. I think there's several things we can do. First of all, there is legislation, bipartisan legislation, to reform our career and technical education system to make it more affordable and accessible, and also tied to employers so that we are training people for the jobs of the 21st century. Secondly, I think we have to get into understanding, we're just talking about teaching, education is a lifelong endeavor now in the 21st century. You know, a lot of young people your son's age, they're going to have 5 or 6 or 7 jobs over the course of their careers. It used to be people would join one company or have one job for their whole career, or maybe two. And so we need to enable a lifelong learning so that people can go back to school and once they have a skill or a serious trade, be able to get reskilled as the economy changes. And we need to make that accessible and give people tax credits and an opportunity to do that. You know, as I mentioned before, we need to make a better commitment. And again, there's been bipartisan support for this around infrastructure. I mean, both the Chamber of Commerce and the unions, the AFL-CIO, have endorsed an infrastructure bank, so that there's so much rebuilding that's needed in America that really could employ millions of people. And we have to look at places like the clean energy sector. There could be millions of jobs in the clean energy sector if we make the right commitments there. So again, it's about looking at the economy as a whole, looking at what young people need, valuing the opportunities that exist, and making sure that they're available, not just even when people turn 20 or 21 or 22, but really over the course of their lifetime.
Monique, tell me a little bit more about the summit. Who all came to the meeting, and when you all left, what did you feel that you were charged to do?
It was a really exciting day. So we had about 40 speakers on the main stage and many more in breakout sessions. But some of our keynotes were, of course, General McChrystal, who was also a co-chair of the event. We had Senator Tim Scott join us in the morning. We had former Governor Deval Patrick. We had executives from Gap and Walmart, Bobby Stilton, who's executive vice president at Gap, and some leadership from Walmart. So we really tried to bring a cross-sector group from both the private sector, the public sector, and the nonprofit space. We had leaders like from Europe and sponsors like Bank of America and Citi. So it really was a diverse mix of people. But, you know, our main goal was to really rally our community around this policy agenda, these six opportunity millennium goals that we reaffirmed ORIST Coalition, and supporting policies that we know have bipartisanship support and evidence base that they work. It's also an opportunity, you know, just to bring the community together. We have a coalition of 330 organizations from across the country, and they're always eager to connect and break sort of out of their everyday work and talk to employers and talk to policymakers and talk to young people. Young people, we talk about them as, you know, the disconnected youth that we're working for, but we also really view them as leaders who can define their own future. So we have a group of 265 opportunity leaders, many of whom are young adults who have experienced a transformational journey. They bring their stories to the summit to really bring to life the issues that we're working on and remind us what we're doing and propose solutions that they think will work for their own lives. So We have a charge coming out of that to work on this policy agenda and to continue to bring people around the table where there is common ground, because ultimately, as Alan said, we know what the solutions are. We need to get moving on them for, you know, the future of our country.
And do you think, Alan, the time might be politically ripe? Because a lot of people think that this came from nowhere when we saw certainly a primary season where all of a sudden we realized, oh, I guess economic opportunity is something that we ought to be concerned about. And we weren't paying enough attention to it. And so as a result, there was a surprise by who got nominated and who fared well here, people who understood that economic opportunity was a big issue. Does that portend that whoever is elected will realize, yes, indeed, this is important?
I think absolutely, Kathleen. I mean, that's why we organized our summit right after the official start of the election, you know, after Labor Day, and we built this big coalition. And as Monique said, and you referenced, we're putting out six big goals: that there should be no child hungry or homeless by 2025, that we should achieve a 90% high school graduation rate, that we should double the number of post-secondary degrees, certificates, and industry credentials by 2025, per the questions about skilling up, that we should reduce unemployment to 5% for everyone, all demographics, including opportunity youth, and cut the child poverty rate in half, that we should re-engage 1 million opportunity youth and put 1 million people in national service. And then we have specific ideas that could be enacted in the first year of a new presidency in Congress that have bipartisan support, like expanding the income tax credit that Speaker Ryan has come out in favor of, Secretary Clinton's in favor of, Patty Murray, et cetera, like career and technical education reform, like criminal justice reform, which we haven't had a chance to talk about, but there's bipartisan support for that.
Yes.
Like expanding national service. And I think that once this terrible election is over, what we're trying to do, we have more than 120 organizations in our coalition that have now endorsed this agenda by name. And the great thing is they've come together to recognize that even though they may work on a specific piece of it, whether it's ending hunger or providing opportunities for opportunity youth or children's savings accounts or whatever, that unless we have a more comprehensive approach, we won't get at this underlying issue. And our hope is that when the election's over, and everything we've put in our agenda has bipartisan support, it's been endorsed by thinkers and leaders from across the spectrum, that we want to push to say, okay, the election's over now. This is the number one domestic issue facing our country. We have to act. And as Monique said, we actually know what to do. And interestingly, people from both sides have embraced these ideas. And so, but it's partisan politics that have stopped them from happening because of the election cycle. So our mission as a coalition, as a campaign, is to say, there is support for this. We need to push it. We need to mobilize it. We hope that, in addition to our coalition members, that, you know, citizens across the country, once the election's over, will say to our political leaders, enough, it's now time to act. And we do think that because this issue has risen, and that's why we want to be prepared. We know what needs to be done, and now we have to commit to doing it. We've done it before as a country, and if we don't, I think we're going to see the kind of terrible division that we have in our country continue.
Let's talk a little bit about criminal justice reform, because it is true that we're seeing bipartisan agreement that something needs to change here, if not for economic reasons. People can't afford prison system anymore. And when you look at the number of young people who may get a record, nonviolent offenses, a lot of drug offenses that stays with them for a long period of time, you get one of those and you just have a hard time moving past it.
As Ellen said, this is one of those emerging issues that there has been incredible bipartisan support. And when we talk about the 5.5 million youth who are disconnected, that doesn't actually even count the young people who are in the prison system. So that's just sort of the way it's been calculated. So we are missing, you know, a couple hundred thousand young adults who are going to have to reenter life with having been engaged in the criminal justice system. And, you know, when you think about, they absolutely need a path to reentry, especially young people who their whole lives are ahead of them. But there's a lot we need to do to even stop that cycle, preschool to prison pipeline. You know, for minor fractions, nonviolent offenses, justice is not being proportionally applied, let's say. So we really also want to look at how do we prevent that? How do we ensure young people get a pathway back into school and work that they might have been on before they went into the criminal justice system, and that they get an education? 47% don't even have a high school diploma. So we know that keeping them in school, keeping them engaged, going back to the question about teachers, making sure teachers and schools have the right community supports, making sure every young person has a caring adult in their life, these are preventative measures we can take to reduce that prison population. But then, of course, there's a lot of work we can do still to get them back into school and training and work once they leave the system.
Yeah. Monique, we're going to thank you very much. We're having a problem with your phone, so we're just going to continue. But we want to thank you very much for being with us and for all the work you're doing. We're just going to have to continue with Ellen because your phone comes in and out, and we can't hear you all that well. So thank you very much, and we'll continue our conversation with Ellen. Monique Reiser, appointed Opportunity Nation's Executive Director in September of 2015. We're talking about the summit that they had in September, and Ellen Casey is our guest, founder and CEO of Be the Change, a movement-building organization creating bipartisan national campaigns. And he also served as the CEO of CityEar, an AmeriCorps national service program engaging 17 to 24-year-olds. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook. Love to read your comments there, the Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sam in Manitowoc is our next caller. Hey, Sam.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually in Menominee County.
Okay.
The reason I'm calling is I wanted to speak positively about the AmeriCorps program. I'm currently in AmeriCorps Vista. I'm 26 years old, and the job market was looking pretty poor after I graduated from college. And AmeriCorps really was a great opportunity for me to, after my year of service, get money towards graduate school or non-competitive eligibility for federal jobs. And it's I don't quite know where I'd be without it right now, so I just wanted to call and speak positively about the program.
And Sam, when your AmeriCorps service is over, what will you do? Do you know?
I'm hoping to go to graduate school and use the money that I get as a seed to get my foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam, this is Alan. What are you doing as an AmeriCorps Vista?
I work on the Menominee Indian Reservation, managing a large community garden initiative addressing food sovereignty on the reservation.
That is fabulous. Well, thank you for your service and thank you for your comments. I mean, I hear stories like this all the time, Sam, from people like you who are serving currently in AmeriCorps or have served or have served in the Peace Corps, who've served in our military. It's, it's a great opportunity, and that's why we have embraced it as a significant part of our agenda. You know, we were just talking about criminal justice reform. There are AmeriCorps programs like Youth Build and Green City Force that are a great pathway for young people coming out of the criminal justice system to do service and realize, you know what, I'm important. I'm needed. I can actually give and not just take. I can be part of the solution. And it boggles my mind that, you know, we have all this support across the spectrum from General McChrystal, from people like Condoleezza Rice and Bob Gates, et cetera. I do hope that after this election is over, that we really recommit to the idea of national and community service and provide more great young idealist people like Sam the opportunity to serve our country. We need it desperately. You know, we're so divided. This can bring us together, and it can also get a lot of important things done, and it provides opportunity, and people learn great skills while they're serving. So I appreciate you calling in, Sam, and I hope that others will support other people like you to have this opportunity. AmeriCorps has now been around for more than 20 years. We know it works. The Peace Corps has been around for more than 50 years. We know it works. It's a matter of, can we provide the resources so that more people have the chance to do it.
Hmm. And it's also a starting. I know the University of Wisconsin-Madison has sent so many people to the Peace Corps. It really astounds me how many people I've interviewed over the many years I've doing interviews to find out that people were in the Peace Corps or were in VISTA. It seems to be a feeding ground for people who go into lives of public service.
Oh, absolutely, Kathleen. We've seen that. I mean, that's the other, it's such a win-win-win, because people who do AmeriCorps, Peace Corps, et cetera, or other programs, whether it's Youth Build or City Year or Teach for America or Public Allies or Jumpstart or Citizen Schools, you can go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
They continue to serve. They continue to participate. So it really is a year that leads to a lifetime of commitment and engagement. And they're also bridge builders, because they've learned to work together. What I like to say is, when people do a year of service, it turns on what I like to call people's justice nerves. Because if you spend a year, and I'm sure Sam's experienced this working with Native Americans, you see what's going on in our communities, and your sense of justice and the need to take action gets turned on, and it never gets turned off once it's turned on. So it's very valuable across our society.
Mike in St. Lawrence, hi.
Hey, Kathleen and your guests. Just a couple of comments. I can't speak to other states, but I can speak to Scott Walker, and I think he's on a course to try and bust public education in the state of Wisconsin and invest more dollars into private schools rather than public schools. And I would add that I heard a program on NPR a while back about Wall Street is now investing in private schools, and they're bundling stuff up just like they used to do with the housing industry. I would also add that it's a waste of hundreds of thousands of children because of the lack of public funding. And you get these fly-by-night schools. I'll give you an example. ITT just went bust. Trump's University went bust. I can't think of the other ones that went bust. And it's all private enterprise. It's all private money. It has nothing to do with education. It has to do with making money for the private schools, the private enterprise, and Wall Street. And the downgrading of teachers, and I just read an article, the whole journal last Sunday had a whole thing about how teachers are just bouncing from school to school to school to increase their wages. And what does that do to our children? You got a great child, a great teacher, and all of a sudden, boom, she's gone. She went out to Oconomowoc or to Waukesha or someplace else to get a better wage. I mean, this whole thing is just a freaking joke. It's time to go back to public education, support our teachers, give them a living wage, and I'm done.
All right. Thank you very much for your comments, Mike. We've talked a little bit about education. I think that you would agree. We have our own political situation in this state, certainly, and it's been a big issue. But you would agree that we need to fund education. I mean, none of this works. None of these great goals will work unless we're providing really top-notch education and have top-notch teachers. I think that's all we can say about this, and that's saying a lot, Alan.
Yes, absolutely, Kathleen. We have talked about this, and I appreciate Mike's passion, and I just think that people have to continue to advocate for supporting teachers and public education. And also, as Monique mentioned, we can't rely on our teachers to do everything, and especially in low-income areas, whether it's low-income rural areas or urban areas. You know, when kids are coming from a place of poverty, We have to recognize that the teacher can't be responsible for all of it, and we do have to have wraparound services. We have a comprehensive agenda that we've laid out with Opportunity Nation so that we do make sure that kids get school breakfast in the classroom so they don't start their day hungry. You can't learn if you have a hungry stomach. You know, that kids get the health care they need, or if they're dealing with issues of trauma, that they get the counseling they need, or that they have opportunities after school, especially if they've got a single parent or two working parents. We need to look at this in a comprehensive way that says if we really want to be an Opportunity Nation, we have to absolutely support our teachers and public education, but then also provide the resources and the activities and services that we need so that people can get on that ladder of opportunity, which ultimately, this is what America is about. It's why my parents and grandparents came here from Italy and Iran. It's why we're the beacon to the world. And if we lose that, then we've lost the very idea of what America is all about.
You know, you just listed all that we have to do, Alan, and I took a big sigh thinking, oh, my gosh, the list is enormously long.
Well, what I'd say, Kathleen, about that is the interesting thing is we know how to do this, and there actually are programs and efforts that work that are doing each piece of that. So in some ways it can seem like it's long, and the other ways, the idea is, can we build a system that knits it together, and can we take these things to scale? You know, one of our coalition members, Share Our Strength, is really leading the effort to make sure there's no child hungry. I mean, this is just a basic thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're the United States of America.
Yeah.
How can we put up with, you know, over 15 million children that are living in households that are food insecure? We know that school breakfast in the classroom works. We actually have a school breakfast program funded. But now we have to make sure that every school that is eligible for that program gets it. So a lot of this is already out there, but it's a matter of both scaling it up and having the will to say this is a priority. It's not like we have to go invent a whole bunch of new things or start from scratch. And part of our goal with Opportunity Nation is to say, folks, this isn't rocket science. It's not nearly as hard as finding a cure for cancer or for AIDS. It's not nearly as hard as putting a man on the moon, which we did 50 years ago. It's a matter of saying, we know what works. Let's expand it. Let's support it. And it pays for itself. You know, as we mentioned, the 5.5 million opportunity youth are costing us $90 billion a year. So it's an investment that works. We know national service works. So it's we just have to do what we always do. We, you know, roll up our sleeves, get to work, and right. We can succeed. We really can.
All right. I like your enthusiasm, sir. Mike, thanks for the call. Nathan in Madison. Hi.
Hi. So I'm Nathan Kizo. I was an AmeriCorps VISTA for 2 years. I did work in flood relief, and then my second year I was placed at a nonprofit organization, and I gained a lot of useful skills for the job market. I'm currently employed in the nonprofit sector.
Great.
With a union. However, I kind of have some issues with the AmeriCorps program in that it focuses on paying people 95% of the poverty level as part of its model, and I think it's really unfair that they don't receive a living wage while you're doing this very necessary community service work. And also, I find that since my term of service, the program is becoming more politicized by those forces in Washington. You currently cannot do any union organizing within the AmeriCorps program, and you cannot advocate or counsel people on abortion access.
Hmm. Alan.
Well, first of all, Nathan, I appreciate you serving not just 1 year, but 2 years. I'd say on the political stuff, there's a very, good reason for that, is that this is, it's taxpayer money. Not everybody agrees on political issues. And so right from the beginning, it was instituted to say, if you're doing AmeriCorps, it's about the service work you're doing. And if you want to do political issues on your own time, you're very free to do that, but not while you're during your service time. And I think in order to maintain the support for the program, and there may be some political issues that you may support that you'd like AmeriCorps to do, whether it's union organizing or abortion counseling, and then there may be others who say, you know what, I want to promote pro-life as an AmeriCorps person. And I think it makes sense to say for that period, whether it's a year or two, while you're in AmeriCorps time, that you don't do politics. You're free to do it outside. Mm-hmm.
And just briefly, the money, we only have about 15 seconds.
Well, I think in terms of, you know, it is a service year, and I think, you know, there's a trade-off between between being able to serve and having as many people as possible to serve and, you know, what people get paid. I do know that it was a fight to say people should get paid at all. There's some people, but if you're going to serve full-time, you have to get paid something so that you can afford to do it. And I think, you know, there's an ongoing effort to just find the right balance there.
Alan, thank you very much for being with us. Join us again, please.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's really great to be with you.
Alan Casey, he is founder and CEO of Be the Change. He has been working with what we talked about this hour, Opportunity Nation. Thanks to Marika Saval for producing the hour, and to Seb Gozman and Scotty Myers for on-air production here in Milwaukee.